This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
We're told that there are two types of yiriyah. The yiriyah is where the linen sections that actually covered the frame of the Mishkan. So we're told, Ves ha-mishkan ta'aseh eser yiriyos. The Mishkan must be made of these 10 drapes. And to make 10 drapes, shesh moshzor, from fine linen, utchiles, va'argomon, v'silashoni, beautiful materials from which it should be made. And those drapes form the sides of the Mishkan. Then further on we're told, Ve'osiso yiriyos izim, and you shall make drapes from goat's wool, le'ohel al ha-mishkon, for the top of the Mishkan. So the sides of the Mishkan were made from this beautiful shesh moshzor, and the top was made from goat's wool. And the top was in fact longer than the top, it was wider than the top, so there was a part left over at the end. What do you do with that part? So the Torah tells us, Yiyeh saruach al tzidei ha-mishkan. On the two sides of the Mishkan, on the north and the south, there was an amah left over on each side from the top of the Mishkan, from the drapes that covered the top. And those two drapes had to hang over the side, an overhang to the beautiful yiriyos which form the outer sections of the Mishkan. Why? Says Rashi, and he's quoting a Yalkut from next week's Sedra, Limda Torah Derech Eretz. The Torah teaches Derech Eretz. What's the Derech Eretz? Sheyehei Odom Chas Al Hayofe. That a person should be sensitive to beauty. It's not altogether clear what this Rashi means. It means that the function of these hanging over drapes was only for beauty, that they had no real function. The Mishkan was covered without it, but it just looked aesthetically more pleasing if it covered over the side. Or it's possible that it means that it's a protection of the side ones, that this overhang protected that very beautiful material with which the sides were made. Be that as it may, the purpose of this one amma overhang on the north and the south was aesthetic. It had no functional purpose. It was aesthetic. And the Rashi says, based on the Chazal, Limdo Torah Derech Eretz Sheyehei Odom Chas Al Hayofe. Which, depending on which way we learn it, either it means Chas Al Hayofe, literally it means sensitive to beauty, or it means he should be careful not to spoil beauty. If there is something beautiful, it needs to be protected. And so these overhangs were made so as to protect, almost like the eaves of a house or the guttering of a house in a sense, to protect that dust and water shouldn't run down the beautiful sides of the Mishkan. And what I want to do with you this evening is a very brief and therefore a relatively superficial analysis of the role of beauty in Torah. How important is aesthetics? Is there any place for aesthetics? Is it something completely foreign? Or is it something that has its place in the Torah? And if so, what is its place? And there's a lot of confusion in that area. Beauty is something that Chazal acknowledge the Greeks excelled in. They made a study of beauty and they made a philosophy of beauty. They made a religion of beauty, of aesthetics. And yet, Chazal showed tremendous kovod, they showed tremendous respect for the sense of beauty which the Greeks developed. Greek itself is considered by Chazal as a very beautiful language, and therefore there are parts of the Tanakh that may be written in the Greek language and still have the Kedusha of Tanakh, the old classical Greek language. Altogether, there seems to be this tremendous kovod, and Chazal learned the Pshat in the Brocha which Noach gave to his son Yefes, Yapt Elohim LeYefet Yishkoin be'ohel Hashem. May the Ribbono Shel Olam increase the beauty of Yefet, and may it dwell may he dwell or it dwell, Chazal learned, may it dwell, that beauty, but Ohol Shem, in the tents and the Bosei Medrash of Shem, which are asked the Yidden, where we already see in that Chazal the openness to the incorporating of beauty into Torah life. And not seeing that as possible just because it comes from Yefet, it comes from the Greek, so it's possible. No? The Gemara makes the distinction, the Gemara discusses at the end of Hamarubah in Bavakamah, the difference between Greek philosophy and the Greek language. Greek philosophy is something Chazal were not too excited about. But the Greek language, because of its beauty, is something that Chazal were always very impressed with and spoke very highly of. Likewise, we see that Greek beauty is something that Chazal shows Derech Eretz for, and that part of the brocha of Noach was V'yishkein ba'oleich shem. Let us incorporate and utilize some of that beauty of Yefet. Yefet was the origins of the Greek culture. Ba'ohol Hashem in the Bosei Medrash of Shem. But how do we utilize that, and what is its function and what is its purpose? On the other hand, we have such psukim as Sheker Achein, Vehevel HaYofi. Chein is lies, and Yofi, beauty, is nothingness. Says Shlomo HaMelech in Mishle, it's not worth anything. So what do we think of beauty? Let's have a brief look at the subject. There is no question that aesthetic, a sense of aesthetics in the way an individual presents himself to the world affects his intersocial relationships. The Gemara asks the question twice in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Mem Hei Amud Beis, Mipnei Ma Talmidei Chachomim Shebebovil Metzuyonim. Why do the Talmidei Chachomim in Babylon, in Bovil, why do they dress so well? It's the Gemara's kasha. Says Rashi, Metzayinin Atzman Belevushim Noim. Why do they distinguish themselves with beautiful clothing? So we already see that the Talmidei Chachomim in Bovil used to dress in a way which brought the Chazal to question even their outstanding, the way that they looked absolutely outstanding. Altogether, we see here the opening of two attitudes in Torah. And these two attitudes have existed throughout the ages. In modern times, there were many schools, but the two with which I've had contact were firstly, the school of the Telzer of, the Telzer family. There, they used to run their rabbonis with malchus, with a degree of royalty. On their table was the finest crystal, silverware. They used to dress meticulously. They used to travel first class. That's how the Telzers used to be. Why? Kovod HaTorah. We'll see in a moment why. They used to claim that's the honor for the Torah. Their own personal needs, they used to use the absolute, just what was necessary. So it wouldn't be strange to find in the house of the Telzerov that he was eating herring and potato, and in Lithuania, herrings weren't as expensive as they are in Johannesburg. Herrings have become a delicacy in South Africa. In Lithuania, people ate herrings because it was cheap, not because it was a delicacy. So it wouldn't be strange to find that he was eating herring and potato on his crystalware and silver cutlery. What I eat is my own business. It doesn't have to be the finest there. It's betzimtzum, just what is necessary. But what my table looks like, it's got to look regal. This is the house of the Rov. The briskers, the opposite. And many others. These were two. Many rabbonim were divided into these two camps. By the briskers, there was always a system of nothing unnecessary. You won't find a carpet in one of the briskers' homes. Because a carpet's not necessary. There's a floor, and the chair stands on the floor, and I stand on the floor. You don't need a carpet. It's unnecessary. Not because they can't afford it. Even the wealthy ones, on principle, won't have things which are unnecessary. And somebody came into the Meir Soloveitchik's home and saw that he had no carpet and felt a bit upset about it and sent him a carpet. And he keeps it rolled up there. So he's got the carpet. It's rolled up on the side. He won't use it. That's a different derech. And nothing, the principle is in the house, nothing in the house which is not necessary. Nothing. That's the principle. And his Rebbetzin told me she's afraid to take her daughter out for a walk on Shabbos in Meir Shorim. In Meir Shorim, can you imagine what she would do if she was living in Johannesburg? In Meir Shorim, she doesn't like to take her daughter out for a walk. The daughter's about 7 years old. Because the daughter will start seeing her friends with all sorts of beautiful clothes and beautiful shoes and this fake jewelry. And she said to me, so you'll say, so what? So I'll buy my daughter also some fake jewelry. It's not expensive. That's not the point. from the fake jewelry it becomes real jewelry, and so all of a sudden, to keep up, there's tremendous pressure on the children to have these extra things which really aren't necessary. And our principle, although they're not poor people, is nothing that's unnecessary. Of course, what is necessary and what is not necessary changes through the ages and depends on the individuals too. And she said, we understand that our children, some of them marry American girls. What's necessary for an American girl is not the same as what's necessary for a Yerushalmi's girl. It's two different levels of necessity. But still, that's the guiding principle in our home, that there's nothing unnecessary. The interesting observation, which my brother made when we were discussing it, was that the level of malchus, the level of regality that you would experience in the home of a telzer or in the home of a brisker is exactly the same. There's no difference. So it comes out that it's not the props that do it. What is it all about? And this question we already see the Gemara dealing with. Why is it that the Talmidei Chachomim in Bavel were so outstanding in the way they dressed? This too, right through the yeshivas, there was, for example, the Slabotka system. The Slabotka derech was such, when you walked into the Beis HaMedrash of Slabotka, and you stood outside before you came in, and you were in the cloakroom, where you hang up your coat and your hat, you would see rows and rows of the most elegant hats. If you wanted to see the latest styles in Europe of hats, you'd walk into the cloakroom of Slabotka Yeshiva, and there you would see each one a different hat with the most elegant coats, and each one a silver walking stick under it, a walking stick with a silver top. That was the fashion at the time. That's how every boy was. When the Kovna Rov used to walk down the main street in Kovna, the Goyim used to come to the windows to look, just to see this man, his bearing, his dress, the way he walked down the street. It was a sight. And you have the Navaradokas. The Navaradokas who claim we're nothing, and human beings are nothing, and the Andoilam Hazeh is nothing, and we mustn't take it all too seriously. It's the opposite way of viewing things. Answers the Gemara. Lefi she'enon b'nei Torah. Funny answer. Because they're not b'nei Torah. Who's it talking about? It's talking about the Amoraim of our Gemara. They're not b'nei Torah. What does Rashi say? She'enon b'nei Torah kol kach lechabdom kivnei Eretz Yisrael. Machmas Torosu. They are not so great in stature that the people honor them merely for their Torah as they do in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, the stature of the Amoraim was so great that irrespective of how they were dressed, they were treated with the greatest of honor and the greatest of respect. People could see the Torah oozing out of them. They just stood head and shoulders above everybody else. They didn't need to be dressed well. But in Bavel, they're not quite as outstanding. And therefore, mechabdim oysom machmas levusheihim. People honor them because of their clothing. Shenirim chashuvim. They appear choshuv. They appear important people. So people give them the honor that they require. So obviously the Amiroim felt that it was necessary that there was covered Hatayra. And they realized that if they didn't dress properly, there wouldn't be covered Hatayra. Because neither they nor the people around them were on the statutes for them to be able to realize merely by looking at them how great and how outstanding they were. And therefore they had to dress like Hashuvim, that when one of them would walk in, as I just told you, that when the Rav of Kovna walked down the streets, even the Goyim came to look. Not because he was such a great Talmid Chacham. What did they know about him being a great Talmid Chacham? They didn't come to chap a word of Torah as he walked past them. The way he was dressed and the way he walked, his bearing. They saw greatness, but in what did they see the greatness? In his external appearance they saw his greatness. But they saw greatness. And he, that was his shita, that was his derech. It was necessary for him to express the greatness of Torah, and if the only way that greatness could be perceived by the population was by means of his clothing, then he had to dress in that way. The Gemara further down the page repeats the same question and asks, the same question, why are the Talmidei Chachamim in Bavel outstanding in their clothing? And here the Gemara gives a different answer, because they are not in their homeland, says Rashi, Eretz Yisrael golu l'sham, because they were sent there from Eretz Yisrael. They were foreigners. And the person who goes to a strange place dresses himself outstandingly so that he should be choshuv, so that people should know he's not a nobody. In your own town, people have heard about you. They recognize you. It's not necessary to dress up for the part. When you go to another town, people don't know, and it's necessary. This is a different answer. But again, we see that it is possible to communicate chashivus. It is possible to communicate importance by the way a person dresses, by begodim noim, by levushim noim, by beautiful clothing. It makes the person realize this is somebody different. This is something that needs special treatment. This concept, in fact, is a very beautiful Zohar, which gives us much deeper insight into the whole concept in a different way. The Zohar is in Baal Oisecho, on Daf Kuf Nun Beis Amud Aleph. The Zohar is discussing the stories of the Torah. Stories of Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov and Yosef and so on. And he says, Hai Sipur Doraisa, these stories of the Torah, Levusho Doraisa Ihu, they are the clothing of the Torah. That's what he calls it, the clothing of the Torah. Tachazoi, come and see. Is levusho the ischazi lekal. There is clothing which everybody can see. The inun tipshin, and these foolish people, kat chamon lebarnash belevusha, the ischazi lun shviro. When they see a human being who looks well dressed, a foolish man sees an individual walk in, and he's got a long black coat, he's got a big black hat, he's got a white shirt and a nice tie. They stand up for him. You see, they don't look any further. They see already that the uniform is there. It must be a choshev yid. They consider the clothing as the body. When they're standing up, what are they standing up for? They're standing up for the long jacket. They're not standing up for the person. They don't know the person. The jacket could be walking in on one of these window models that they have in the windows, and they would also stand up. You can make one of these little robots that they're now able to make and dress him in a long coat and a big black hat and send him in, and people will stand up because they're standing up for the clothes, not for the person. They don't know the person. How can they be standing up for the person? All they know about him is the way he's dressed, and that's why they stand up for him. That's why they honor him. Chashivu dehau levusha gufo. They consider the clothing as the body. The chashvu de gufo nishmaso. And what about the body? They consider that the neshama already. That's the hidden part of the human being. That's already the neshama. Kahai gavno oraisa, the same as with the Torah. Islo gufo, the Torah has a guf, it has a body. Ve'inun pekudi oraisa, and that is the mitzvahs. The body of the Torah, the guf of the Torah, are the mitzvahs of the Torah. The ikrun gufei Torah. Hai gufo mislabsho belevushin, this body is dressed in clothes. The inun sipurin, the high alma. And that is the stories of the Olam Hazeh, which we read in the Torah. The narrative of the Torah is the levush. Let's stop and understand that here a little bit. You have people, if you ask them what they think the Torah is, it's Bible stories. That's how they learnt it when they were children, and that's how it sticks with them throughout their lives, unless they've learnt differently. Take an average child in King David's school, in any class, and ask him what the Chumash is. Ask him to tell you something about the Chumash, something he learned in Chumash. What will he tell you? He'll tell you a story of Avraham, about Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef. If we're lucky, that's what he'll tell us. What should it be? If you say to a person, tell me something about the Torah you've learned, he should tell about the mitzvahs. It says in the Torah, you've got to keep Shabbos. It says in the Torah, you've got to keep Kashrus. This is what the Gufei Torah, this is what the body of the Torah is. The narrative, that's the levush. The levush is the way a body presents itself to the world. You can have a body, but it's not practical for the body to operate in the world without clothing. For a number of reasons. And one of the reasons is, you don't know how to relate to him without his clothing. You don't know who he is. One sees it very clearly in the army. How do you know how to relate to another soldier? By how many stripes he's got. That's how you know how to relate to him, how to speak to him, how seriously to take his instructions. But it's like that socially as well, in the general world too. You create your impression from the way he comes over. And the way he comes over is primarily his levush. What is his levush? His clothing, meaning literally his clothing, and his general bearing, the way he presents himself to the shul. The way he presents himself to his community, the way he presents himself to his society, that's how you relate to him, that's how you see who he is. Do you know, have you given him a farhed? Do you know what kind of a Talmid Chochem is? Have you examined him in the whole of Shas? Have you watched his midas for months and months? You don't know yet. So your initial interaction is determined by the way he appears. The way he appears is the way he's dressed. So too with the mitzvahs. If the Torah would just give us the mitzvahs, a list of mitzvahs like a Shulchan Aruch, we wouldn't know what to do with them. We need to see an Avram living Torah, Yitzchok living Torah, Yaakov living Torah, Yosef, Moshe, and Aaron. We need to see these people living Torah in a real world. Then we begin to see how the mitzvahs are closed, how they're presented, how they function, how they work. And we can begin to establish a relationship with these mitzvahs even before we understand them in all their depth and in all their detail. We begin to acquire an intuitive feeling and an understanding. So it is that the Sipurim of the Torah, the stories of the Torah, the narrative of the Torah, are the mislabsho, are the levushim. Tipshin de Alma, says the Zohar, the foolish people of the world. It's amazing that even in the time of the Zohar they were tipshin. It's not a new invention. Even in Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai's time they were tipshin de Alma, the foolish people in the world. Lo mistakli elo b'hau levusha. They just look at the narrative, they look at the clothing. The iu sipur d'oraisa. That's the story of the Torah. V'lo yadir yasir, and they don't know any more than that. V'lo mistakli b'mar de'ihu tachus ha'u levusho, and they do not penetrate and see what lies beneath that clothing. This is the machla, this is the disease of the entire world in which we live, superficiality. Judging things and operating on the basis of the way things appear. It's true that's how you have to start off, but what differentiates a deep person from a superficial person is he who is able to penetrate beneath the clothing and see who is the man, not what are the clothes. What lies underneath those clothes? Likewise with the Torah, the superficial person will see the narrative and that's the Torah, nice stories. But the necessary thing is to be able to penetrate tachas ha'ulavusha, under that clothing. Inun deyadin yosir, those that know a little more, they don't just look at the narrative. Ela begufo, they penetrate to the body of Torah. The iu tachus ha'ulavusha, which is under that levush. It's not separate. The narrative and the guf are not two separate things. The same as the clothing is over the body, and it follows the more or less the outlines of the body, and it moves with the body, and it's integrated with the body. Yet it isn't the body itself. It's a covering over the body. So the narrative of the Torah is part of the Torah, and it's tied to the gufim of the Torah, to the mitzvahs. It's the mitzvahs in action. But you've got to see beneath that, you've got to see the mitzvahs. Chachimim, Avdi Demalki Yiloh, the wise people, servants of the Ribbono Shel Olam, Inun Dekaimu Beturah De Sinai, those who stood at Mount Sinai, Lo Mistakli Ena Benishmeso, they penetrate even further to the neshama of the Torah. What lies behind the mitzvahs, the things we were discussing in shul last night, what the intention of the Ribbono Shel Olam is as far as we're able to understand it. What's the underlying principle, what's the value system under the Torah? That's the neshama. The iyu ikro de kala, that is the main, the bottom line of it all. Oraisa mamish, that is Torah. Once you get through the narrative, to the guf, and through the guf, through the body, to the neshama of the Torah, where you're really understanding what's behind the mitzvahs, what's beneath the mitzvahs, then you're relating to the neshama. Then there's depth, then it's real Torah. And so we see that just as the Torah needs to clothe itself in narrative, the neshama needs to clothe itself in a guf, in a body, the body needs to clothe itself in levushim, in clothes, so a human being too has to have clothes. That's the way his superficial expression, the way he superficially presents himself to the world, is in his clothing. The Chachomim in Eretz Yisrael wore ordinary clothes. It wasn't necessary for them to be distinguished in their clothing, because they were distinguished deeper down, and that distinction was clear and absolutely visible. But the Chachomim in Bavel felt that it was necessary for them to be distinguished in their bearing and in their clothing, so that people would know them and would understand them, know who they are. And there we see the two derochim. In halacha we have a similar concept. This principle is acknowledged in halacha. Amram tzavo apotropos diyasmi havei. Gemara in Gittin daf nun beis. Amram tzavo was a guardian of some orphans. He had to look after their estate. Havu atu kroivim lekamed Rav Nachman. Relatives of the orphans came before Rav Nachman with a claim. Omri Leh, they said to him, kolavish umachsi miyasmi. You know what? We saw him the other day at a sale at Leveson's, and he was buying on the account of the orphans. That's not right. That's not the right thing. Omaluhu, he said to them, no, nothing wrong with it. Ki hechi delishtaman mile. He's dressing well, so that in his negotiations on behalf of the orphans, people should take him seriously. People will listen to him. He'll have status. If he'll dress like a schlump and he'll go negotiate on behalf of the orphans, they'll push him aside. Who's he? So he's dressing expensively so that he should be able to command respect when he enters into negotiations, and therefore he's entitled to take that from the estate of the orphans because he's doing it for them. So again, we see the principle in halacha expressed and understood that the way one presents oneself has tremendous effect, whether one likes it or not, on the way one comes over, on the impression that one makes, on one's ability to interrelate correctly, and on the status with which one is viewed in the world. To what extent is this an objective, real value, and to what extent is it just as the Isaiah says, the tipshin d'alma, the stupid people of the world? Is it just stupid people of the world who are impressed by clothing, and that's all it is? Or is there a little bit more to it than that? By the way, when it says that the Talmidei Chachamim of Bavel were mitzuyonim in their clothes, that doesn't mean that in Eretz Yisrael they used to walk around like tramps. It just means that you couldn't notice any difference between them and the other people. They weren't outstanding in their clothes. But there are halachas that the Talmid Chacham's clothing has to be absolutely meticulously clean, and he has to be look good at all times. That they certainly did. The only thing is, it wasn't mitzuyonim. When you saw them walking down, you didn't stop and say, who's that? He looked like an ordinary person, meticulously clean, well dressed, and that was it. In Bavel, when the Talmid Chacham used to walk around, you stopped in your tracks and you looked, you wondered who it was. There's the famous Gemara, which is based on a Mechilta. When Bnei Israel crossed the Red Sea, and they saw, and afterwards they sang the Shira, one of the things they said is, Ze keli v'anvehu. This is my God, and I shall glorify him. And the Mechilta asks, how do you, anvehu really means decorate him. This is my God, and I shall decorate him. How do you decorate God, asks the Mechilta. What do you do? So the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, brings the Braisa and says, Ze keli v'anvehu, it means, Hisnoe lefonov. Make yourself attractive in front of him. How? The mitzvahs, using mitzvahs. Asel lefonov sukkah noy. When you're making a sukkah, don't just make stam a sukkah, make a beautiful sukkah. Lulav noy, a beautiful lulav. Shofar noy, a beautiful shofar. Tzitzis noy, a beautiful talis. Sefer Torah noy, a beautiful sefer Torah. And so on. What does that mean? That to be Mekayim, to give fulfillment to the principle of this is my God and I shall glorify him, it's not sufficient just to do the mitzvahs. If you're just doing the mitzvahs, that's not yet the mitzvah of Zeh Keli V'Anveyu. Zeh Keli V'Anveyu is to do the mitzvahs with objects of mitzvahs, Chetzah Shel Mitzvah, which are particularly beautiful. You're buying a lulav, not stam a lulav, a kosher lulav. You can buy a lulav which is absolutely kosher. But if you can afford it and you can get one which in addition to being kosher is also beautiful, that's Zeh Keli V'Anveyu. You're building a sukkah, good, kosher sukkah, 100% lovely. But it also needs to be a beautiful sukkah, that's Zeh Keli V'Anveyu. A Sefer Torah, it must be a beautiful Sefer Torah, and it must have beautiful clothes on it. The outside must be beautiful of the Sefer Torah. And everything we do in the mitzvah is a talis, it should be a beautiful talis. All this is part of Zeh Keli V'Anveyu. What does that mean? Does it make any difference to the Ribbono Shel Olam if it's beautiful or it's not? Got a kosher lulav, does the Ribbono Shel Olam care what it looks like? The answer is yes, he does. And one has to look at the words very carefully. One might think that what the Gemara is saying is, in order to make the mitzvahs dear to one another, in order that other people should find the mitzvahs attractive, therefore use these things, but it doesn't say that. It says, His no'er lefonov. You make yourself attractive b'mitzvahs within the mitzvahs. And it's lefanov before the Ribbono Shel Olam. It doesn't say lifnei habrias. In front of humanity make yourself attractive with the mitzvahs. It doesn't say that. It's his noya lefanov. This is a part of our Avodas Hashem. This is a part of the service of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That in addition to doing the mitzvahs correctly, they also need to be done with a certain aesthetic sense. They must also look beautiful. There must be beauty in a mitzvah. Must look good. Why? If a man standing on his own, locked up, he's not in a minyan, nothing, he's shaking his lulav and esrog, going on his own, nobody will see him. Is it important that the lulav must be beautiful? Yes! Why? He's snoya lefonov, because the Ribbono Shel Olam is watching. So we see that this is not just an interpersonal concept. That somehow the concept of beauty is something which even the Ribbono Shel Olam appreciates, kibiyochel, so to say. We need to understand it. We have the same principle with davening. The din is that you must be dressed when you daven as you would dress when you stand before the prime minister or the state president or a king. That's how one has to be dressed. Why? That's it. That's covered for the Ribbono Shel Olam, covered for the tefillah. Does the Ribbono Shel Olam care? Rachmana libe boy, the Ribbono Shel Olam wants a good heart. So what difference does it make? Come in your khaki shorts and your t-shirt and stand in front of the Oron Kodesh and daven with a real heart and cry your heart out. Isn't that good enough? The answer is no, Pialocha, that's not good enough. And if it's not in a shul and it's not in a minyan, it's just you at home, nobody's looking, still not good enough. That's not how you stand before the Ribbono Shel Olam. That means the Ribbono Shel Olam is looking and he cares what you look like. And if you look like a shlump, he doesn't like it. And if you look like a prince, he does like it. Why is this important to the Ribbono Shel Olam? Before we discuss why it's important, we just need to put it in its correct perspective. When the Gemara discusses in Shavuos, when Nehemiah says that when the wall of Yerushalayim was built, the Gemara in Shavuos, that is Vav Amud Aleph, it says, "Va'amido shtei toidos gedolis," and I set up two big toidos. Toidos are Thanksgiving items. And the Gemara is discussing, is it talking about the chalas of the toido? Or is it talking about a korban, about a sacrifice? Is it talking about a big animal or big chalas? And the Gemara says, so what does it mean? Gedolus b'mina? Maybe it means that in that type of animal that he brought, whatever it was, sporim, or whatever it was that he brought as the korban toido, let's say he brought a big one, asks the Gemara, mi iko chashivuso kamishmayo? Is there such a thing as chashivus by the Ribbono Shel Olam? Does it make any difference to the Ribbono Shel Olam if it's a big ox or a small ox? V'atanya, did we not learn in the end of Menachos, Ne'mar ba'oilas behema, where the sacrifice of a cattle is talked about, it says, Ishe reach nichoach. It's a beautiful korban for the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ba'oilas ha'oif, when a bird is being talked about as a sacrifice, it says, Ishe reach nichoach. B'mincha, when a flower offering is talked about, Ishe reach nichoach, it's all termed as a beautiful sacrifice to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So it seems to make no difference if it's an ox or what's flower. Melame, that teaches us, she'echod amar be'echod amamit, whether you bring a lot or you bring a little, uvilvad she'echavenis libo lovim she'reshamayim, provided your heart is dedicated to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So what does that mean? The Gemara says here that there's no chashivus by the Ribbono Shel Olam. All he wants is a good heart. And if you bring a little bit of flour as a sacrifice, it's just as good as bringing a korban, bringing a big ox. And Tosfos asks from that. After all, we know that you've got to bring the best. If you've got a flock of sheep and you want to bring a korban, you can't just bring anyone. You've got to bring the best one. And if you set aside a good one and you later found a better one, the view is that you've then got to bring the better one. So how can it say that there's no chashivus by the Ribbono Shel Olam? So we see there is chashivus. If a person brings the maximum he's able to, uvilvad she'echavin liboy la'oviv sheva shemayim, his heart is for the Ribbono Shel Olam, and therefore he brings the most choshuv he is capable of, the most important and valuable that he is capable of bringing, then it makes no difference whether that is an ox or its flour. But if he's able to bring an ox and he chooses to bring flour because it's cheaper, that the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't like. So now we see that there is such a thing as chashivus. Let's try and summarize. What is the purpose in our discussion this far of aesthetics in Torah? So we've seen there's an inyan of chashivus. It makes a thing important. It decorates it. It makes something which might be mistaken to be ordinary, it makes sure that everybody knows it's not ordinary. You know that it's something very special. That's what decoration has the ability to do. to utilize aesthetics, takes something ordinary and shows the world that it's special. It can be special without the decoration as well, but the world doesn't know it. The decoration is an external manifestation of the specialness of an item, of an object. By making it beautiful, we show that it's special. And we've learned that in interpersonal relationships, this is terribly important. That if it's possible that a person might miss the specialness of an individual, it's necessary for that individual to dress in such a way that that specialness will not be missed. The irony is interesting, that the individual who has to dress himself up is acknowledging his own inferiority. He's actually saying, I need to dress up, I need to wear my medals and my uniform, because without it nobody will know who I am. That's what he's really saying. And if he dresses that way, it won't go to his head. If he remembers that ideally it shouldn't be necessary, that the Amiroim in Eretz Yisrael were unrecognizable by their clothing. You couldn't distinguish them from the rest of the people. In Bavel you could. That's because in Bavel they weren't as great as they were in Eretz Yisrael, not because they're greater. You don't dress up because you're great, you dress up because you're afraid people might miss you if you don't dress up. It's an acknowledgement of insufficiency. But what about the Ribbono Shel Olam? So with the Ribbono Shel Olam we see that on the one hand there is a concept of Hisnoye Lefonov B'mitzvahs, to beautify yourself before the Ribbono Shel Olam with mitzvahs, by making beautiful mitzvahs. And on the other hand, says the Gemara, that there's no chashivas by the Ribbono Shel Olam. It doesn't matter how big or how expensive the item is. If a person takes a mitzvah, so he's got 200 rand which he could comfortably afford on a lulav, and he goes and he wants an absolutely kosher lulav, and he finds a lulav which is perfectly kosher, the most kosher lulav he can find, costs 100 rand, and next to it is another lulav, not more kosher, just more mahuda, it looks more beautiful, 200 rand. If he can't afford the 200 rand and he takes the one for 100 rand, nothing wrong. As long as his heart is for the Ribbono Shel Olam and he's taking the best he can, that's what he can do. But if the person says, no, this one's good enough for me, I don't have to spend the extra money on the beautiful one, what is he really saying? He's sacrificing the aesthetics. In a sense, we've got an anomalous situation which needs to be resolved. In a sense, we're saying there's no chashivas klap Ishmael, that the Ribbono Shel Olam does not acknowledge relative importance. And on the other hand, we're saying if you can afford better, you've got to take better. That means the real problem is when you can afford better and you don't take better. That shows cheapening. There's no chashivas. Chashivas, importance, is an objective reality. It is a value in the system of values of the Ribbono Shel Olam. There's such a thing as chashivus, as making something important. But in the making of it important, there are two factors, not only one. There has to be aesthetics. How much aesthetics? As much as you can manage. That's the measure. There's no objective measure in the aesthetics. In Greek beauty, if you come along to a Greek aesthete, if that's what you call them, and you'll say to them, is this picture beautiful? And he'll look at it and he'll say, no, it doesn't conform to the golden triangle, and it doesn't conform to the golden rectangle, and this isn't in proportion with that. No, it's not beautiful. And you'll say, but I would like you to know that this is the best this artist could do. He's been struggling with it for years, and this is the best he can produce. The Greek will say, then he shouldn't be an artist. Let him go and do something else. He hasn't made a success. That's not how the Ribbono Shel Olam says. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, if this is the best he can do, that's beautiful. If he's put effort and energy to achieving a peak of perfection in beauty in chashivas, and this is as far as he can go, that's beautiful. En chashivas klap ishmaya. That's all. The difference is that the Ribbono Shel Olam does not measure beauty objectively. He measures beauty subjectively. Have you done your best to make it as beautiful as possible? Because if you haven't, then it's not choshuv to you, then it's not important to you, and it's lacking in its absolute. There's another aspect to beauty, and then you'll understand the whole picture. It's true that Shlomo HaMelech does say, Sheker HaChein VeHevel HaYefi, that Chein is a lie, and beauty is nothingness. Now, what does that mean? Is aesthetics a spiritual value, or is it a quantitative measurable object? That's what we need to determine. The Greeks tried very much to make it quantitative and measurable, but there's a way to determine whether a thing is beautiful or not. So there are certain formulae which they developed, and they said if a thing subscribes to these formulae, it is beautiful. The difference between something which is quantifiable and something which is spiritual is what it does to another object. Does it add to it, or does it multiply it? Does it have an arithmetic or a geometric effect on other things? What do I mean, for example? If you take a piece of copper and you plate it with silver, that has an arithmetic effect. It's now copper plus silver, and the outside appears silver. But it also does something else. It changes the whole object. If you have the number 10 and you add the number 2 to the number 10, then you've got 10 plus 2, you've got 12. You took something which you had and something else which you had, and you put them together, and you've still got the two things. What happens if you take the number 10 and you multiply it by 2? You're not adding anything to it. You're just making it more of a number 10. It's twice as big as it was before, but it's still that same number 10. You've added nothing to it. You haven't changed it. You've affected it. You've made it become bigger. But you haven't added something external to it. We should have our mathematician friend here. You'll understand it better with this example. If you take 10 and you add 1 to it, you've got 11. But if you take 10 and you multiply it by 1, you've still only got 10. Because you've added nothing to it. When you multiplied it by 2, you made it 2 tens, you made it double itself. When you multiply it by 1, it's still... If you take 0, and to 0 you add 5, now you've got 5, because you've got 0 plus 5. If you take 0 and you multiply it by 5, you've still got 0. Because multiplication cannot add anything. Multiplication can only take what you've got and make it bigger. That's what it can do. A geometric progression and a geometric effect is in arithmetic what Ruchnius is in Torah. An arithmetic progression and an arithmetic effect is what Gashmius, what materialism is in Torah. Material things, you can take 1 plus 1 and make 2. But with spirituality, it doesn't go like that. With spiritual things, you can take what you've got and you can make it better. Can't add anything to it. You can't take a mensch and make him a mensch plus something else. You can make him a better mensch with Ruchnius. And it applies with all things in Ruchnius. If beauty is an arithmetic thing, beauty is material, if it's an object, quantifiable, then you can take something ugly and add beauty to it, and it will now be an ugly thing plus beauty. But if beauty is spiritual, and you take something ugly, and you add beauty to it, or you multiply it by beauty, what are you going to have left? Something very ugly. That's what you'll have. A nezem zohov be'af chazir, a golden nose ring in the nose of a pig, says the same Shlomo HaMelech. That's what you'll have. You can't take a chazir and put makeup on him, and put jewelry around him and say, look how beautiful. He's a beautiful chazer. That's all. And the truth is that an ugly chazer looks better than a beautiful chazer. Looks more natural, looks himself at least. When you beautify a chazer, you're still left with a chazer, you've got nothing else. A beautiful chazer you've got. You haven't added anything to him. All you've done is you've made him a bigger chazer. That's all. Hevel hayoifi. Rebbe Lopian used to say, the Hevel HaYofi, beauty is like a zero. A zero on its own is nothing. And 10 zeros is also nothing. And 100 zeros is also nothing. Put a 1 in front, oh, what the zeros start doing to it. It's the same concept. Yofi is not something which can be added to an existent thing. Yofi is not something which can stand on itself. Beauty doesn't stand on itself. Beauty can magnify and elevate something which you already have. If you've got a Sefer Torah and you make it beautiful, you have a beautiful Sefer Torah. If you have a lulav and you make it beautiful, you have a beautiful lulav. If you have a sukkah and you make it beautiful, you have a beautiful sukkah. If you have a Talmud Chacham with beautiful clothing on, is a beautiful Talmud Chacham. And if you've got an Am Haaretz with beautiful clothing, you've got a beautiful Am Haaretz. But it doesn't make him Ois Am Haaretz. That's what one needs to understand with beauty. And so the two measures are that it's the same Yesod, it's the same principle. The principle is that beauty is not quantifiable and it's not an objective thing. It's not something which can be measured that one can say, that's what beauty is, and that is more beautiful than that. If you want to know what's more beautiful than what, you need two things. Number one, you need to know what's lying underneath the beauty. You need to know, is it a golden nose ring in the nose of a chazer, or is it something very beautiful? So you can't really judge the beauty until, as the Zohar says, you've gone down to the goof. But if the goof is beautiful and the outside is beautiful, then you've got something which is extra beautiful. And people relate to it in a beautiful way. And the second thing is, since it's something spiritual and not something quantifiable, you've got to measure it relative to the person's effort. You can't take it separate. You can't separate it from the individual who made it and judge it on its own. You've got to say, if it's beautiful in terms of what he is able to do, what he's capable of achieving, then that's beautiful and that has aesthetic appeal. What then is the role of aesthetics? There is no role for aesthetics per se. There's no such thing as beauty for beauty's sake. It has been said that whereas the Greeks have made a worship out of beauty, the Jews have made beauty out of worship. And that's the Nafka Minah. By the Greeks, beauty is an end in itself. They've made it into an idol. What is an idol? Something quantifiable and measurable. They've given it objective standards. This is beauty. This is more beautiful than that. It doesn't matter who made it. It doesn't matter why it was made. It doesn't matter if it was the best effort or not. It makes no difference. There's an objective way of looking at it. This is beauty. That we don't have. And we have no place in Torah for beauty in its own sake. There's a very beautiful Tosefes Brocha. The Tosefes Brocha was the Torah Tamimah, who was the son of the Oruch HaShulchan. The next week, Sedra, he says something very beautiful about the Mishkan and the clothes of the Kohanim. He says, if there's so much stress on beauty, why is silk not used anywhere? Silk is the most beautiful of materials. Everybody strives for silk clothes and for silkware. Nowhere. Not in the Mishkan and not in the clothing is there any silk. Why? And he answers with a Ravid. The Ravid says in the second perek of Klei HaMikdash, he disagrees with the Rambam. The Rambam says, Moir is a certain substance which was used in the oil and the anointing oil. And the Rambam says Moir was made from the blood of an animal from India. And the Ravid says, I can't accept that in the Beis HaMikdash we would be using the blood of an animal and even a treif animal. That's not shaykh. Says the Oruch HaShulchan, honey is not allowed to be brought, says the Tosefes Brocha, honey is not allowed to be brought in any of the korbanos, in any of the sacrifices. Why not? So he says, which is an interesting idea, I don't know if this is altogether right, but this is what he says, that really honey should be treif, because it's made by a bee, and a bee is not kosher. Chazal find a way to say, no, honey is kosher, because the bee doesn't do much to it. It really comes from the flower. It doesn't go through the body of the bee. But still, says the Tosefes Brocha, it's too close to a treifa animal to be allowed into the Beis HaMikdash to the korbanos. The fact is, it is made by a bee, and a bee is not kosher. And the same way as the Ravid says that there's no way that Moir could be the blood of this Indian animal, so we don't use honey. And he takes it a step further and he says, for that reason we don't use silk, because it comes from a worm. We're not going to use something which comes from a worm in the Beis HaMikdash. As beautiful as it is, that already detracts from the beauty, because we're not Greeks. We don't just look at the end product. We look at where it comes from. And Rachmona Liba boy, if behind the limited beauty, there's a good human being who's trying his best, and this is the best he can manage to produce, the Ribbono Shel Olam loves it. And for the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's beautiful. And if he's a man who could do much better, and he produces something very beautiful, but he could do better, the Ribbono Shel Olam is not satisfied. If he can afford an ox and he brings a bird, the Ribbono Shel Olam is not satisfied. There has to be the chashivus, there has to be the importance given to it, which there is, the chashivus of aesthetics. We don't just look at the end product. We want to know where it comes from. Beauty is not skin deep only. It's important to look that beauty has a history to it. Beauty is something ongoing. Beauty is an expression. And just as one has to look at the beauty and see it in relationship to that which lies underneath it, so one has to look at it in relationship to its origins, to where it comes from and what it is. So in conclusion, yes, when Rashi says, Limda Torah derech eretz, sheyehei odom chas al hayofi, Torah taught derech eretz, one must be sensitive to beauty. Beauty is important, and he calls it derech eretz, it's the way of the world. People tend to attach more importance to something which is presentable, to something which is beautiful, than to something which is just slapdash and ugly. That's the derech eretz, that's the way of the world. And the Torah teaches it because it's a value that even the Ribbono Shel Olam appreciates. Even the Ribbono Shel Olam wants it. Why? We discussed last night that there are certain parts, according to the Rambam, there are certain parts of the halachas, of the mitzvahs, which we don't have to philosophize about. The details of the halachas we don't have to philosophize about. We need to know that there's a menorah. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to make a menorah. He wants us to make a shulchan for the mikdash, an oren for the mikdash. We've got to try and philosophize why. Why a menorah? Why a shulchan? Why an oren? Why a mizbeach? Why a mishkan altogether? But why the menorah has to have six branches, and a stem in the middle, and a stand, and this and that, that we don't have to philosophize about. That we discussed last night. And we said, in that case, why does the Torah go to all the details of telling us about these details? Especially in the case of the menorah, when the menorah didn't have to be manufactured. Moshe just threw the ingot into the furnace and out came the menorah. So what did Moshe have to, what did the Ribbono Shel Olam have to show Moshe? A fiery image of the menorah on Sinai? Why does he have to take so many psukim of the Torah to tell us exactly how the menorah must look if it's unimportant to us? Practically it's unimportant to us because God made the menorah, and philosophically it's unimportant to us because the Rambam says there's nothing to philosophize about these things, so what do we need it in the Torah for? We said because although one doesn't philosophize and one doesn't ask why, it is an expression of what God likes. That it is. But Ribbono Shel Olam likes a menorah to look like that. Why? It doesn't matter why. It's the same as an individual. The mother of the house, the wife of the house, comes in and she lays her table in a particular way, and she puts her candles in a particular position, and she folds the serviettes in a particular way. You don't have to come home and start saying, I would like to know the philosophy behind the layout here. Why do you fold the serviettes like this and not like that? And why do you lay the table like this and not like that? Her answer is, because that's what I like. That's how I like it to look. And we said that while you can't philosophize about it, you certainly get to know something about the mother of the house. When you walk into somebody's house for the first time, you look around. You can't start philosophizing, why did they put that picture there, and why did they do this, and why did they do that? It's not a nonsensical question, says the Rambam. But one thing's for sure, you get an impression as to what they like. Because you get an impression as to what they like. Therefore, you get an impression as to what they are like. So it is with the Ribbono Shel Olam. We get some kind of a glimpse of what he's like, because we are able to see what he likes. This is how he likes a menorah to look. This is how he likes a shulchan to look. This is how he likes a mizbeach to look. No philosophy, that's how he likes it. Here we see that one of the things he likes is beauty. He likes a luluf to look beautiful. He likes a sukkah to look beautiful. He likes people to look beautiful. He likes a beis hamedrash to look beautiful. This is important to him. Is there a whole philosophy behind it? No, no whole philosophy. Just that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam likes. And through exposing ourselves to that, we get a little bit closer to an understanding and to a feeling of who the Ribbono Shel Olam is and what he is. By understanding and appreciating what he likes, and by surrounding ourselves with things that he likes. And therefore the role of aesthetics is important. Now, aesthetics is that in all that we do, it is important for us to present them in as beautiful a way that we know how and are capable of doing. And each one's sense of aesthetics is slightly different, and each one's capacity and ability is slightly different. And so each one will do his mitzvahs in a slightly different way, all subscribing to the basic halachas, yet each one in slightly different styles. each one trying to do it as beautifully as he can. And if that's the case with a cheftza shel mitzvah, if that's the case with an object of a mitzvah, a lulav, an esrog, a sefer Torah, tefillin, mezuzah, how much more so is it with a human being himself? A human being who is already created in the image of the Ribbono shel Olam. How much more so is it important that he projects of himself a beautiful image? What does beauty mean again? A, that there's got to be something underneath the beauty. No point dressing up a rosho and saying I'm trying to be beautiful. There has to be midas, there has to be Yiddishkeit, there has to be honesty and straightness. There's got to be a beautiful neshama underneath it all. But let's assume that that is there. Then there has to be beauty in the way that one handles oneself. That one dresses properly, that one speaks properly, that there's a certain beauty in one's speech, that there's beauty in one's bearing, in one's handling, in one's movement, in one's relating to people. But there's not a clumsiness, that there's not a complete neglect of these refinements of beauty, which are important. They're important as a levush, just as a clothing. Not more important than clothing. But nobody would think of going out without their clothes. And once you're wearing clothes, the clothes should look good. So it is these things. They're not the end of the world, but they're important. If we're doing things already, do it nicely. And if we must make ourselves beautiful before the Ribbono shel Olam with beautiful mitzvahs, we must also make ourselves beautiful before the Ribbono shel Olam in the way we do those mitzvahs. That there should be a certain sense of beauty to them. And in fact, there's a second view in the Gemara there. Abba Shul says, no, v'anveyu, how are you mekayim the mitzvah of zeh keli v'anveyu? Hevei doimeloi, by emulating the Ribbono shel Olam. Mahu chanun v'rachum, afoto heye chanun v'rachum. Just as the Ribbono shel Olam is kind and merciful, so you be kind and merciful. That's the aesthetics the Ribbono shel Olam likes. So we see the two coming together. The objective aesthetics of a beautiful lulav, a beautiful sukkah, a beautiful tefillin, a beautiful sefer Torah, and a beautiful human being. Mahu rachum afato rachum. To operate in that way and to see that way with beauty. Perhaps our generation has reacted against earlier generations where beauty has been overemphasized. Style has been overemphasized as an end in itself. And where style was seen to exist independent of anything beneath the style. And perhaps the generations of the last 20 years or so have been reactionary against that. Style is not important at all. Rachmana Liberboy, all the Ribbono shel Olam wants is the heart. It's true. Rachmana Liberboy. But he wants that expressed in that one should do the best one can. And the best is in style. But in a part to the things that one does, being absolutely in accordance with halacha, there's still a lot of area where one can express one's individuality. And still give chashivas, give importance to the things that one does by his noy lefolov, by incorporating the principles of Torah aesthetics.